The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hello, Tim. What's new?
Oh, lots of new stuff, as always. Before I forget, quick shout out to all the people that are going to be at the head of the Charles Regatta this weekend. It's always lovely weather in Boston this time of year, Saturday and Sunday over.
Are you lying?
2,000 entries. Yeah, kind of. It snowed okay. There 1 year when we were up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's okay. I got it. Well, also, ready?
Yeah.
Go Tribe.
Go Tribe.
Yeah, we won the what is it, the championship of the ACLS or whatever it is?
We have a pennant. So
we have a pennant, an American League pennant.
Yes. So the important question is, would you rather play the Dodgers or the Cubs?
I don't care.
I want the Cubs.
I want the Cubs only because then they don't have to travel to L.A.
Oh, I don't care where you have to travel to. That doesn't matter. I just want to I want to see people that are suffering more than we are in Cleveland. I want them to suffer more.
We're not suffering.
Not anymore. My new slogan is, we are the Champagne City. With all the champagne corks that we've popped recently,
I see.
I'm going to go with the Champagne City. How's that?
I like that a lot. That's awesome. I'm very excited. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. And it doesn't matter. I mean, we made it to the World Series. It doesn't matter how it turns out. It's just, it's a great thing for the city. Everybody's excited, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so fall riding weather's here.
That means?
It just means it's cooler. You get to wear arm warmers and leg warmers when you start out, and then you get to peel them off because it warms up.
Right.
Right. I'd like to give you a quick update on Shelley Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
She is doing well.
That's always good.
She has been moved to a rehab floor at Metro General here in Northeast Ohio. She's regaining some strength. She seems to recognize everybody. She's smiling and thumbs upping, and they've got her sitting on the edge of the bed and in a chair. So she is on her way, albeit slowly, to recovery. Her medical fund on GoFundMe surpassed the $100,000 mark this week. And I know there's going to be a legal team put in place. So I don't know all of the details of that. I just do know that there is a legal proceeding that's going to come. If anybody's interested in following Shelley's progress, it's GoFundMe.com, Shelley Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R. I think we're going to dive into this week's show.
I'm ready.
Okay. We were talking about raising funds, and I believe many of us are supporters of one type of special interest or another. I support animal rescue. There are political causes. There is listener and viewer supported podcasts and shows. This past week, a new book by Tim Wu, who is an author, a professor, and evidently the man who coined the phrase net neutrality, which was bantered about not too long ago, was the topic of a discussion on Terry Gross's show, Fresh Air, which is also one of my favorite shows. I should only aspire to be as good as Terry Gross. The book is called The Attention Merchants. It focuses on how and why our time is being sucked away by the ads and pop-ups and short content that we see on our computer screens for hours on end. Have you found yourself in that position?
Oh, of course. And not just computer screens. It's on your phone.
Everywhere you go.
Everything that's mobile. Right.
Right. So Professor Wu discusses what we can do to take back some of that wasted time and instead enrich our thinking. So what does that have to do with our show? Professor Wu is not on our show. We're not going to be talking about having ads pop up and our time sucked away. Coincidentally, though, one of the most popular cycling blog sites on the web today is Red Kite Prayer. Mm-hmm. We've had Patrick on the show before. And Patrick Brady has come to the conclusion that perhaps a reader-supported model instead of an all-advertising-supported model is the future.
Yes, I agree.
Well, he's going to talk to us about his thinking as he launched his new reader-supported portal this week, a campaign that is going to allow readers to vote with their money, which I think is kind of a cool thing, too. And I do want to know whether or not advertising is influencing writing or not. And he has some interesting things to say about that. We'll also talk with Philadelphia Frame Builder and the main sponsor of the Philly Bike Expo, Stephen Belinky, Belinky Bike Works. Arguably one of the most talented builders working in the craft today, Stephen and his daughter, Bina, have created the premier East Coast cycling event, bringing artisans, activists, and alternatives together. That's the way the website is advertised. The Philly Bike Expo is coming up in 2 weeks. And then we'll have some news, and then we're off to Colorado to speak with author Jason Sumner. His revised and updated version of bicycling's complete book of road skills was published this past August. It is the second edition. We're going to tap into his ideas about riding faster, stronger, longer, and safer. We talk about skills a lot.
Yeah.
Well, he's got some interesting things to say. It's a very easy to read, kind of fun book to read, and it's got a lot of good tips in it. So let's head on out to California. We're going to catch Patrick Brady before he jumps on a plane and heads out to Italy. I think he's going on a tour of Corsica with the Santana Group. Patrick, thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Yeah, Diane, thanks. It's been too long.
It has been. It has been. I think the last time I saw you was at NABS or something. It's just been a while.
Oh, gadzooks. That's way too long.
It was. So this past week, I don't know if you heard it, Terry Gross from Fresh Air, the NPR show, interviewed professor and author Tim Wu. He is the man who coined the term net neutrality, and he has a new book called The Attention Merchants.
You know, I'm a big fan of the show, and I listen. I just haven't had a chance to listen to that one yet.
Okay, it just happened a couple of days ago. So it really ran along the lines of what you and I are going to be talking about today, and that's how advertising and clicks have changed the way we see and read and understand what's being written. So, you know, we're inundated with all this stuff, and we have to try and figure out, but we're not really getting any content. And as a content-rich site, Red Kite Prayer has decided you're going to do something new. I want to know what that is and what you believe it's going to accomplish. So let's start with, who is your audience?
Our audience is, not to put too fine a point on it, but mostly white guys who've mostly had their 40th birthday. So they kind of reflect me. We've all sort of self-selected into a club where we tend to look a lot alike. I'd like a more diverse audience, but, you know, we attract the folks we attract. And so our content fits for a cyclist who's been in the sport for a very long time. And if you look at what cycling was 25, 35 years ago, there are a whole lot of white guys and not a lot of other people.
That is true. That is true. I don't know about your metrics much, and I'm not asking you to reveal anything you don't want to reveal, but can you tell us approximately how large your reading audience is?
It's roughly 60,000 unique viewers in a given month. You know, we've had 2.5 million people visit the site, but in any given month, it's about 60,000.
Okay. So, working with those numbers, have you ever had readers complain, and that might be too strong a word, I don't know, but or mention the idea that you are probably beholden to your advertisers and therefore you endorse their products or services and maybe are not 100% able to say some of the things you want to say because somebody else is paying the bills?
So, because RKP is technically a blog, we accept comments from our readers. We do get all sorts of feedback. Some of the feedback is really helpful and constructive, and some of it is just kind of pinheaded, I'll say. And so we certainly get accused of, oh, you just like this because they're an advertiser, or you just like this because you want them to be an advertiser. And so, you know, I take that to be a vocal minority. You know, I don't think it's the majority of our readership by any means, because if that was the case, our readership, I think, would be smaller. And, you know, maybe it's not bigger because more people don't trust that we're, you know, not beholden to advertisers. But you know, this is a way, you know, what this effort is a manner to try to reassure readers that we are independent, that, you know, we go our own way. So I mean, I guess we shouldn't beat around the bush. We've begun accepting reader subscriptions.
Yes, that's where we're going, is to what you're changing. All right. So tell us how that's going to work.
It's pretty simple and straightforward. There's a little widget from PayPal that we paste into posts at the bottom, and it gives people four levels of devotion, we'll call it, that they can choose. And these are automatically debited each month. We're also going to start something more NPR style in terms of annual memberships that people can sign up for, so that, you know, they pay one time, but that's kind of the gig for the whole year, and we'll leave them alone. So, you know, different people have kind of a different threshold for how they'd like to be helpful. But, you know, our content has been 100% free up until now, and it continues to be 100% free. There's not going to be any paywall. We're not going to start hiding stuff from you unless you pay up. So this really is pretty seriously NPR style in terms of, hey, we do this, you know, why don't you help us out?
So I want to go down two roads with that. How has the response been so far? And it's only been up there for a few days.
Yeah, it's been dynamite. I think we're at 4 or 5 days now. I'm not really counting that. But, you know, we've definitely got support. It's growing. It's already at a meaningful point. And this is one of those efforts that, because it's brand new, and people are still probably, at least some people, sorting out how they think about it and whether they want to be participating in it, I think it's going to take a little time to catch on. And it's one of those things that, you know, over time, you know, if we retain people and don't alienate them and continue to pick up others, it'll become more and more meaningful. And so, you know, my hope is that, you know, it will bring us to a point where, you know, we can really start to support a number of freelance writers. Right now, our freelance content is somewhat limited, and I'd really like to grow it a lot.
So there are a couple of other things I'd like to talk about with this listener-supported, or in this case, reader-supported model, and that is that if you do listen to NPR, they have corporate sponsors. How are you going to balance? Is there a way to have somebody like, and I'll just grab a name out of the hat, Campagnolo, and not have it look like they're a real, I'm just trying to figure out how it would work in print the way it works on the radio.
Well, it's really no different than, you know, any model you've looked at, you know, with magazines. You know, traditionally you pay to buy a magazine and there are advertisers in there, and different magazines charge different amounts for what you buy. And so if you pick up, say, the Surfer's Journal, there are 6 sponsorships in an issue. Actually, I haven't looked in a while, but last I knew, there were 6 full-page sponsorships, and that was it. No more, no less. And we're talking a publication that was, you know, upwards of 130 pages, sometimes 200 pages. And so, you know, they really live and die by their readers. I'm not in a position where I can stop taking advertising tomorrow. We don't have that kind of support. And so we're going to continue to accept advertising for some time to come. And, you know, honestly, presenting advertising to our readers is something I do believe in. You know, I like for them to know which manufacturers, you know, care about reaching them. They're a different audience. They're a very smart, affluent, and influential audience. And, you know, that slice of cyclists out there means a lot to certain manufacturers. And to have them aware of, you know, who cares about their opinion and their money, you know, that purchasing power, I like for them to know that. And so, you know, I suspect that we will navigate those waters, you know, in an increasingly careful manner. I could see us cutting down what we charge for advertising and maybe limiting the amount of advertising that you see to make it a little bit more exclusive and, you know, hopefully, you know, still give people a way, give those companies a way to reach the readership without further concerning the readers about, you know, what our independence is. But I would like to do all that I can to reassure our readers that we are independent in terms of what we publish.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. Let me remind our listeners that we're speaking with Patrick Brady from Red Kite Prayer. The blog site is going to go to has already gone to a subscription option. Is that a good way to put it, maybe? It's an option.
Yeah.
Do you believe that your content will be richer and fuller and better? I mean, what will change, or what will you hope would change? And not just for Red Kite Prayer, but as other people look at this model and say, you know what? I don't want to have ads popping up in my face all the time. I mean, that was the whole point of Professor Wu's book, is that, you know, it's grabbing our attention for hours on end. You want to get to people and have them say what you want to say.
Yeah.
Is that going to change? How do you see that?
Number one, in terms of, you know, what our content is, it really won't change. There might be a couple of stories that I would chase that I wouldn't have chased before, more industry-oriented pieces. But in terms of, like, you know, our reviews, the things where people are most likely to criticize us for having been, you know, bought wholesale by a manufacturer, the reviews won't change. I'm not a big fan of negative reviews. I don't think they really provide much service. And at this point, the bike industry, by and large, is so competent that you don't run across many products that you need to be warned about. You know, back in the 1980s, that was a very different story. There was a lot of really not terribly safe stuff out there, bars that broke, stems that broke, you know, all sorts of things like that persisted well into the 90s. We don't really see that anymore. The closest thing I've come to something that I've considered for reader service is looking at a particular line's fit geometry and, you know, pointing out that, you know, well, their size run is kind of like, you know, three sizes but same fit. I just don't see the stuff that you really need to be warned about. And so I would rather devote my time to a positive review that gets people thinking about what it is they want in a ride and getting them excited about going for a ride. I mean, my real goal is that when someone closes that browser window, the next thought in their mind is, good golly, I need to go for a ride this afternoon.
Right. Exactly. As if we didn't already do that in a lot of cases. Well, So it's all pretty exciting. I really like the idea, I think. And we are getting used to the idea that everything's free, and people forget that nothing's free. And I think that's a hard one to get across to some people that, you know, content right now, you can get anything for free. You can go out and type in Google and it'll give you everything. But it's just not so. And so I'm wondering if you're having any pushback yet from either advertisers or readers.
I haven't had any terribly explicit conversations with the advertisers. I continue to just try to do the best I can to serve them. And I'm actively engaged in pursuing new advertisers. You know, there may come a point where we need to have a talk. But right now, the deal I'm offering them is the same deal I've been offering all year. I think our rates are pretty good, and I think we offer a pretty great service. I mean, how we handle our advertising is different than a lot of outfits in that, you know, we present advertising much the way you would in a magazine. It's done on a display basis so that when someone advertises with me, I tell them exactly where the ad is going to be. There's not some sophisticated machinery in the background, you know, serving up the ad. And so you don't end up, you know, accidentally having someone's ad appear three different times on the same page.
Right.
And, you know, having a phone call about clawbacks after that. You know, we try to be really straightforward with people. And I try to make sure that the advertising is contained in a way that there's no confusion about what is ad and what is editorial. I don't see any point in confusing the reader. I'm not trying to pull something over on the reader. RKP exists because we do editorial. We like writing about cycling. That's the whole point. There's no chicken or egg question here. You know, we exist because of content, and we have advertising to, you know, make the content possible. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty simple. Well, I think it's a really bold and positive step. I am looking forward to seeing how well it works.
Oh, thank you.
Well, have a good time. I know you're going to Italy. I can only say I'm envious, although I'm going to the Philly Bike Expo, and I'm pretty excited about that. Steve Belinke's on the show, too.
I still want to see that.
You haven't been there, huh?
Nope. Want to. Need to get there.
Yeah, it's a good fun time. Well, thanks so much, Patrick. Have a really safe trip and have fun and say hello to all the McCready folks at Santana.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Take care. Bye-bye. Patrick Brady joined me from his home in California. He is about ready to head out to Italy. Lucky him for a tour with the Santana Tour Group. We are going to now head on down to the East Coast, somewhere in Virginia, where we'll catch up with Stephen Belinke. He is the acclaimed frame builder out of Belinke Cycle Works in Philadelphia and also the main sponsor of the Philly Bike Expo. That's what he's going to talk with us about today. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to the Outspoken Cyclist.
Sure.
Philly Bike Expo's coming up first weekend in November. It has grown so much since you first started it.
Yeah, like a little egg.
Like a little egg. And so now we're going to have a chicken or what?
Yeah, a big plump. Well, what's it called? An oven stuffer.
Give us a little bit of overview of the expo, because it's not your normal, you know, just show up and there's a bunch of booths. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Right. Well, as other shows, we have the marketplace, as now I'm starting to call it, booths and companies, et cetera. But you know, we have our full slate of seminars. We also have an indoor test track, and we have quite a few demos. So we have some live action of different skills and information for people.
I know there are seminars on both days because Brian and I are giving one, but highlight a couple of the others that are going to be happening over the weekend. What's interesting is you will be taking people off of the show floor to do seminars. You're going to run them all day, and it looks like there are going to be plenty of them.
Yeah, I think it's like 20, maybe 22 with you and Mel. Well, we have quite a few like multi-panel type seminars this year. And so we have the Women in the Bike Biz seminar. So maybe you'll be popping your head in there. And that's actually moderated by a woman who used to work for Fat City Mountain Bike People and was one of the founders of IF. And now she's doing her own clothing business. And we have some interesting entrepreneurial women, and so that should be a pretty interesting panel. We also have two things that have to do with randonneuring or endurance cycling. And so we have the challenges of the rando bike design, and that's moderated by Jamie Swan with a nice slate of frame builders, with Mark Noblet, who builds the Renee Hurst bikes, Johnny Coase from Brooklyn, Simon Firth from Hanford Cycles, and Francis Cycles from the West Coast. And he builds some really nice integrated bikes and cargo bikes. Then we also have the actual riding of brevets and randonneurings and endurance events. And we have a coach, Todd Parker, and we have a bag maker for people who are doing long distance. We have Rivet Cycles, who I hear she eats up 1,200K rides like crazy, and a couple other people on that. So that's more about the riding of events and how to do that, and the other one is about the bike and the equipment. And we also this year have a builders panel, which is moderated by Mark Norstad from Paragon Machine Works.
I have a real quick question before we leave the randonneuring category, and that is, are you seeing an increase in your orders for randonneuring style bikes?
If I just say no, I think it's like, still happening for some builders, but I think maybe the, what you call it, the peak of the rando bike it's a little past, and now it's the like time of the gravel bike. So that's kind of like what I'm seeing. I want a bike. Basically, probably in the last week, I already got like 3 inquiries out. I want the bike that does everything.
Interesting.
So they're not really saying, I think randonneuring is really just like triathlon. It's a really like specialty discipline. And the people that want that bike is a real specialty market. Whereas I think this idea of the bike that like, I can use it for all purposes seems to be the focus.
Isn't it funny what goes around comes around? Because, you know, years ago, you'd get a bike like, and this is just a production bike, like the Fuji Touring 3. And it would do everything, right? Anyway, let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Stephen Belinke. He is on his way to the East Coast Interbike Expo, but we are talking about the Philly Bike Expo. I wanted to know, because it's a family event, what kind of activities there are for kids. And congratulations, Grandpa Zadie.
Thank you.
On your new baby. That's very cool.
That's the egg part, I guess.
That is the egg part. Only now it's hatched.
Right. Well, we have, once again, a seminar, but it's called Family Cycling How-To's. I'm not sure if that's the official title, but basically how to do riding with kids of all ages. We also have, as part of our indoor test track, we have a specific test track just for kids where they can ride various kinds of small bikes. And we also have 2 companies that just specialize in kids' bikes. So you can see the bikes, but you could also take those bikes and take it for a test pedal.
That's a cool idea. I like that idea a lot.
We have 3 different companies that have that are specialized in kids' bikes. You know, lightweight. One was like lightweight kids' bikes. Another one's a more traditional, just really little tiny kitty bikes.
Getting kids on bikes early is a really big part of keeping the sport alive.
Right, because then they may grow up to hate it, but more than likely, it's going to be the beginning of something. And then they'll be buying the all-purpose bike in 20 years.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. So one of the things, the tagline for the Philly Bike Expo is it's artisans, activists, and alternatives. And I think we can figure out artisans and activists. What are the alternatives? What is it that you're talking about there?
Well, the idea was beyond, you know, bikes as like a passion or a hobby or, you know, something, a mechanical device, is the alternatives is that there's, you know, non-car lifestyles. And so kind of like highlighting on ways that bicycles could be used for transportation and other utility type things. So basically, we'll say alternative energy, but this is like people energy. Right. And so how that can like restructure how people live, where people live, and hopefully it's all part of a more sustainable and healthy lifestyle.
I'm excited to come back. We've been there several times, and we always have a good time in Philadelphia. I was actually born in Philadelphia, so I'm really happy to be back there. Let's tell our listeners how and when and where and why the event is going to take place. It's coming up quick.
Right. We'll place it about 2 days before the presidential election, so you probably can't miss that. November 5th and 6th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, which is in Center City, Philadelphia. Follow the signs because it's in a different hall this year, and I don't know the letter. Why? Well, if you want to see some of the best builders in the bicycle world today, frame builders, if you want to see what's happening in clothes, equipment, components, and whole bikes, and if you want to catch some really cool seminars, which the one I was going to also highlight is pretty cool. Somebody who was an inside U.S. agent for SunTour is going to be giving a seminar, which is basically called the How the Sun Set on SunTour.
You know, I did see that, and I want to see that seminar because that was my era of, you know, getting into the business, and watching the disintegration of that company was amazing. If you weren't there, it is a fascinating story.
Yeah, supposedly there's like parts of the story and some products that people never heard of or never saw. And so I think that's, you know, probably something I really want to see this year, and I think a lot of other people will. Interesting, I pulled out an old newsletter from my company of 30-some years ago, and it was a newsletter we were doing. This is way before blogs. We actually printed it on paper, and it was called The Sterling Times. And, you know, we were just same old thing, trying to have content to help promote the company. And so we had an article called Godzilla versus Mothra. And that was the story of Shimano versus SunTour in the early days of mountain biking.
Wow. Wow. You should reprint that.
Well, I pulled it out and I was going to use the picture, but the gentleman doing the seminar had his own picture with some, with, you know, his Japanese compatriots. But I think I will do that for Throwback Thursday, which is today. So I'm going to put it up.
There you go. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for talking to us. Philly Bike Expo, we'll see you there, and have fun in Carolina.
Okay. We'll soak up the heat before the winter. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Stephen Belinke, one of the premier frame builders. You notice he doesn't ever say anything about himself. It's just amazing to me.
It's never about him. It's always everyone else, and that's what makes him so great.
He is a great guy.
And his sense of history that he has. We wish we had a different date that we could use to compare when the expo is, November 5th and 6th, other than our election. We'd all like to forget about that, I think. But
right now we would. Yeah, exactly. It's been pretty ugly. But anyway, we won't go there. Meanwhile, we need to take a quick break. And then we'll be back with some news. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
On Wednesday, October 26th, John Carroll University Center for Student Diversity and Inclusion presents artist and activist Bree Newsom as she explores the nexus of race and the ongoing struggle for justice in America in her lecture entitled Tearing Hatred from the Sky. This free public event takes place at 6:30 p.m. at Donahue Auditorium, located in the Dolan Center for Science and Technology on the JCU campus in University Heights. A reception will follow at 7:45. All are welcome. More information at jcu.edu/inclusion.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I am your host, Diane Jenks, along with
Tim McKenna.
And we have good news.
Let's talk about spending a lot of money.
Oh, sure. I love to spend money, as long as it's not necessarily mine, but go ahead.
Sure. This is up in Montreal. This is a bike share program. Bixi Montreal is gearing up to expand its network with more bicycles and more docking stations. The bike rental system also wants to make it easier to access a Bixi without forcing people to sign up for month-long contracts. Bixi Montreal said Friday that the usage of the system has grown tremendously since its corporate structure was changed in 2014. Over the next 2 years, they want to add 1,000 more bicycles, 80 more docking stations, and what that total cost and their total investment is $9.5 million.
Yes, see, I remember the last thing I heard about Bixi was that they were bankrupt.
Apparently, they restructured in 14, and that helped to turn it around and make it much better.
Cool. Well, I'm pretty sure everybody who knows anything about cycling knows about this, but just in case, Robin Williams was not just an avid cyclist, but I did not know he was a rabid bike collector. So this week, his children made 87 of his bikes available on auction to raise money for two charities, the Challenged Athletes Foundation and the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation. The bikes run the gamut from a 20-inch Schwinn to a Waterford 33 road racing machine and 85 bikes in between. There's at least one each of an Orbea, a Trek, a Serrata, a 7, a GT, a Voodoo, Merlin. It is unbelievable. You can view the collection if you're interested. You can get in on the bidding. I think it's open until October 31st. It is www.paddle8.com.
It's almost easier to mention the brands that he doesn't have.
Almost.
With 87 of them.
And there are some, they're not even sure what they are. They said unknown. I'm like, unknown. Okay.
We've talked about this for years, haven't we? If you took the labels off and if you took the color off, that's just, you know, typical color for that brand, most people wouldn't be able to tell, right?
You are absolutely right. They're all equipped with XYZ.
Right. Or maybe he spent a lot of time with his local home build bike mechanic, and maybe that worked out better.
Maybe.
For those in Cleveland, Ohio this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, you'll see Saturday today and tomorrow Sunday, you will see a lot of cyclocross bikes on the Shoreway, on the east side of the Shoreway. The North Coast Grand Prix of Cyclocross will take place at the Kirtland Track, which is, it's about half mile out of downtown Cleveland. It's right there on the Shoreway that you can actually see when you're driving by.
Kirtland?
Kirtland.
As in Kirtland, Ohio?
No.
Oh.
As in the park is Kirtland. I think that has to do with the Kirtland pumping station for the...
The water pumping station.
Right, which is right there. And it's
wow.
One of those, I never see it. You're driving by on a Sunday and you go, oh, hey, wait, there's an event going on. And I always... So this one, actually, I paid attention to in advance just a little bit.
Well, that's very, very cool. In other news, though, David Shaper on Morning Edition, evidently on NPR, talked about human errors drive the growing death toll in auto crashes. So we know that distracted driving is a huge problem for cyclists. Well, evidently, it's also a huge problem just for people in general in cars. Our cars and trucks are being made with more safety features, new technologies such as lane departure warnings, blind spot detection, vehicle stabilizers, and anti-lock brakes can and do save lives. Yet, more people are dying on the nation's roadways. Okay, nearly 18,000 in the first 6 months of this year. That's a huge jump of 10.4% over the same period of time in 2015, and it's part of a disturbing trend, according to the federal officials, because traffic fatalities rose significantly last year, too. After decades of progress reducing fatalities, all of a sudden we're suddenly losing ground, said Mark Rosekind, administrator of the NHTSA. So the government is teaming up with safety advocates, highway designers, and others in a new effort to try to reduce the number of traffic fatalities to zero within 30 years. So that's Vision Zero, right? We talked to her. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you something. The best thing they could do, in my humble opinion, which is never that humble, is every time you get in the car, either you put your cell phone in your glove compartment or some device within the car turns it off. And that ought to solve a lot of these problems.
And then people always say, well, gee, if you're in the passenger seat, you should be able to. Yeah. There's something. I'm sure there's a way that we can get around that.
Right.
Let's tag on to that real quickly with another Bike Radar article. Can self-driving cars make the roads safer for cyclists? And it's a nice article that covers a lot of things. But really, the bottom line is that cyclists could get the upper hand on the roads when it comes to all of the sensors and everything that are built into the self-driving cars because they have to be extra cautious. Actually, they may give cyclists a little bit more room on the road. They actually may pay more attention to opening your door when there's a cyclist coming by and all of those things that we used to look for that we don't have. It's a nice article by Josh Patterson, BikeRadar.com. It talks about some things that I hadn't thought about in the past.
So you're saying that if some of the things in self-driving cars are implemented to be over-designed for looking out for objects?
Yes. Objects are actually there as opposed to when the human is driving, they're not paying attention to all of that.
Oh.
The autonomous vehicle is always aware that it's there.
That's interesting. That's interesting. All right. My last one is from the He Said, She Said department. So who are we usually talking about when we say things like that? We're talking about Betsy Andreu and Lance Armstrong. So this past week, everybody was in Ireland, and I wasn't paying attention to that. But what I did pay attention to is there's a podcast and a news talk show called Newstalk.com, Newstalk.com Breakfast. And Lance Armstrong was on that show with its host. And I guess it was some rambling 30-minute interview. And at the end, Lance was so upset, he just hung up on the guy because it was by phone. Cut to the next morning. And Betsy comes on the air in answer to the same interview. And she talks about what her response to what Lance said. So it's kind of fun. If you want to hear it, it's newstalk.com/podcasts, Off the Ball. And it's highlights, one is Lance Armstrong, the OTB interview, and the other is about Betsy. So it's more he said, she said.
Of course. That's what makes it all work, right?
That's hard news. Oh, there we go. Let's take a break, and we will be right back. You are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist, and we are going to speak with Jason Sumner. He is the author of The Complete Book of Cycling Skills, the second edition, which was published by Rodale Press back in August. Jason's out in Colorado. So, hi, Jason. Thanks for joining us on the show this week.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure because we talk about bike handling skills a whole lot on this show, and I was really happy to get a copy of your book, Bicycling Complete Book of Road Cycling Skills, second edition. So tell us a little bit about Jason and your cycling history, if you would.
Sure. I'll try to keep it as quick as I can, but I started out as a regular stick and ball sports journalist working up in Boulder, Colorado, and just through twist of fate, ended up getting a job at a magazine called Velo News, and that basically turned me into a cyclist. So that was back in about 2000, and I've been a cycling journalist and passionate bike rider ever since. Worked for Velo News for about 5 years and then have been working for myself most of the ensuing decade, except for the last couple years where I'm the features editor for a website called mtbr.com, and we do mostly mountain bike product reviews and industry news and that kind of thing. And then from a cycling perspective, I've got basically one of everything in the garage. I don't discriminate. Love the road bike, the fat bike, the mountain bike, cyclocross bike, and of course, the bike to go grab beers with. So it just is, it's really an integral part of my life. And probably the biggest joy I've gotten lately is my daughter, who's about to turn 2, has just started to show some interest in her Strider bike. So that's really exciting. Get to try to pass on the love of cycling to my next generation, if you will. So that's it in a nutshell.
Maybe she's inheriting the bicycling gene. That's what we call that here on the show, that you were born with the bicycling gene. You just didn't know it till a little bit later.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, it's been you know, everything from, you know, it helps keep you healthy, maybe keeps you out of trouble a little bit, and that's obviously a lot of fun. So I hope she, I hope the gene runs strong. Her mom's a great cyclist as well, so she's got a good odds of inheriting that cycling gene, if nothing else.
That's a good thing. So let's talk about your book. Your comments in the introduction emphasizes something that I think our industry as a whole overlooks, and that is the lifelong benefits of being a cyclist. So as we're talking about your 2-year-old, we could also be talking about 80-year-olds and the span in between how healthy cycling can keep you. What do you think?
The short answer is I agree. To extrapolate a little more, I mean, it just, to me, it's, there's what all the different things that cycling can bring to the table to a human being. And it's a lot of fun, first and foremost. I mean, I think most of us probably go get in our bikes because we want to go enjoy ourselves. But it's also, as you mentioned, a very healthy activity, kind of low impact on the joints, things like that, which makes it something that you can do later on in life. Say versus running or alpine skiing or something where as you get older, maybe those become a little bit harder for us to do. Cycling is a great way to get around. It doesn't burn fossil fuels. So it's a fantastic mode of transportation. And I think you're seeing that idea being embraced more and more, especially in cities with things like bike share and stuff where they're, the master plan of a city's transportation network is integrated into, cycling is integrated into that. And then, like I said at the end, it's a great way for me to spend time with my daughter. We go out and I have a nice long driveway and we go play there. So there's just so many different ways that cycling can touch my life. It helps me explore all kinds of new places. I've been to South America and Europe and Central America and all over the United States and seen a lot of those new places via bicycle. And I love to race once in a while too. So there's that competitive element to it. So there's so many different sort of touch points for cycling in your life, and you can pick and choose, and maybe all it is for one individual is the way to get to work, and for somebody else it's the way to spend time with their kids, and somebody else it's a competitive outlet. So I don't know. It's a long answer there, but you get what I'm saying. It's just, you know, cycling's a great thing.
And it is. You won't get an argument from me. So let's break down a couple of your chapters. Let's start with Skill Building 101, which is, you know, it's just like fundamental stuff. I think many riders today aren't using their bikes because they're afraid of traffic. What are some of the confidence building skills a rider might be able to perfect to be less fearful and more successful as a cyclist?
That's an interesting question and a tough one to answer in some ways. But I think it may sound like cliche, but I think number one would just be practice. I think if you haven't ridden your bike in a long time and you think it's going to be, you know, it's not likely that you're going to just go pull it out of the garage, jump on it, and then go ride through crosstown traffic. I mean, that'll just be too nerve-wracking. So I think, you know, sort of step number one, especially is just to go practice, find some quiet streets or some bike paths and just get comfortable on your bicycle. And that's comfortable shifting gears and comfortable using the brakes and comfortable, you know, turning and things like that. And there's all kinds of drills, and I won't try to go through a bunch of different drills here, but, you know, whether you go buy my book, which obviously I hope you do, or, you know, go on the internet, there's lots of things there, but you want to be able to do things like I said, shift gears or grab your water bottle without looking down, because you want to be looking ahead, of course, to see where you're going. Be able to master the skill of looking back over your shoulders to do things like check traffic without swerving around. Is more advanced, perhaps you learn to do things like bunny hop an obstacle because you don't want to run over, you know, that bottle that's in the middle of the road. But I would sort of just to circle it back, I would just say practice, you know, get on your bike and go ride it and do so in non-stressful situations. And then once you've become comfortable and confident in that kind of situation, then try to carry that over to the, what we'll call, you know, there's no doubt about it, riding, you know, across Manhattan on your bike can be a pretty stressful experience. But if you're comfortable on your bike and confident on your bike, you'll have more energy to sort of be aware of your surroundings and, you know, not get hit by the number five bus, if you will.
Yeah, that would be really nice. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Jason Sumner. His book, The Complete Book of Road Cycling Skills, probably one that many of us, if not most of us, might want to have on our bookshelves. It is from Rodale Press. You know, bike commuting is growing. We do know that. It really is growing. But there's such an intolerance for cyclists on the urban streets. Tell us a bit about your street smarts. You have a chapter about evasive maneuvers and survival skills. What are they?
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost, we all need to be good cycling citizens. And just because, you know, the guy driving, you know, next to you is angry or having a bad day and is not giving you respect, I don't think that allows you to sort of channel and do the same thing. So we need to be responsible cycling citizens, and that means obeying the law. So you need to ride your bike just like you would drive your car, and that means stopping at stop signs. That means, you know, signaling your intentions. That means changing lanes in a, you know, sort of the right way instead of an erratic fashion. So just sort of generally speaking, you know, ride your bike like you would drive your car. And that is, you know, just, you know, obeying the rules. Because I think what a lot of the aggression we see comes from drivers who see cyclists acting irresponsibly, acting like maybe the laws don't apply to them. And then that makes them mad. They feel like, oh, these guys are just sort of thumbing their nose at the rest of us because they're on their bicycle. So I think that's really the number one. And that's, you know, it's not sort of street smarts in its more classic definition, but it's, I think it's a really important point for people to understand. And I think that, you know, the number two thing is think about strategic routes. You know, the fastest way to work in your car might be to, you know, just, you know, go right down the heart of the city on Main Street. But on your bike, maybe that's not the best idea. And so whether it's getting a map of your city and finding out where there are bike lanes, or just going out on the weekend when maybe the roads are a little bit quieter and trying to figure out what are the more sort of strategic routes to get where you're going, so that you have a plan, so that you're not sort of lost and end up on a really busy road with no shoulder and no bike lane. And then I'd say thirdly, think about visibility and be proactive about visibility. And that means, you know, don't dress in all black if you're planning to go out and ride at dawn or dusk. There's lots of great apparel and lights that you can buy or get secondhand off the internet or whatever, to help you be more visible, whether that's clothing, lights, you know, helmets with bling, all kinds of things out there. So do a little research and make yourself visible so that, you know, there's just one less factor working against you when you're out on the road. So you obviously want to, you know, if the driver can see you, he's less likely to run into you.
Well, that's true. I want to talk about riding rain or shine. I mean, we know we race rain or shine. We put on events. It's rain or shine. People who commute need to be able to ride in the rain. You get caught in the rain. You're sometimes cold. You have some interesting things in your book and suggestions for riding in the rain and dressing for the cold. Give us just a couple of tips for that.
Yeah, I think the number one thing is just to think about your core. And this may go against, like, we've all grown up and it's like, oh, you need to keep your head warm and your feet warm and your hands warm. And that's obviously important. And so, you know, a pair of good gloves and shoe covers and a beanie are all items that you should have in your arsenal as you go out and ride in the cold. But I think the number one thing you can do is really think about keeping your core warm. So layering up at the core a little more, and whether that's a insulated base layer or that's adding a vest to your outfit. Just you want to really try to keep the core warm. And the reason for that, I'm not a doctor, but the sort of basic physics behind it, or physiology, I should say, is that the warmer your core is, the better blood circulation you'll have. And that blood circulation in turn brings heat to those outer extremities. So if your core gets cold, your body goes into this sort of protection mode, shunts the blood more into the core, doesn't put as much blood out to your extremities, and then you're going to end up with numb hands and numb feet. So I think really trying to dress strategically, you know, sort of outward in. And the other thing is obviously to get wicking fabrics. You know, you don't want to wear a cotton t-shirt as your base layer, because a cotton t-shirt will soak up with sweat and it will just hold that sweat against your body, and that's going to make you cold. So some of these more technical fabrics, they call them, that will wick moisture away from your body. And there's all kinds of them out there, and I'm not going to, you know, try to go through them all or anything, but just things that will help move that perspiration away from your body, allowing your skin to stay dry, will help you stay warm on the bike and hopefully make your commute a little more happy, even if it is pouring rain or even snow.
Yes, we do get that here, and that's going to be where I'm heading right now, the cold months. Many of us hang up our wheels. I mean, we have ice, we have snow, and we go indoors for training. You have suggestions for cross training and weight training and indoor training. What? Just give us a few tips about that off season and what you think riders should concentrate on to be ready to come back out in the spring and be strong and, you know, powerful.
Sure. Well, for me, and this is a personal choice, and I'm not saying the right answer here, I'm not a huge fan of riding indoors, so I don't spend a whole lot of time on indoor trainers. Now, but I will talk about them in a second. So for me, the wintertime is an opportunity to do different things. And where I live in Crested Butte, Colorado, you know, my living room elevation is about 8,600 feet. So we obviously, snow is part of my life. So I like to do different things like fat bike, like Nordic ski, like alpine ski, like backcountry ski. The point of that is, you know, A, it's just you get to be outside, which I think is always a good thing. B, I think it's good to do different things and let your mind sort of, if all you ever do is ride your bike, you know, cycling is always great, but maybe if all you do is ride your bike, maybe it could start to get a little boring. So to try to freshen that up with different activities or at least an alternative, you know, riding a fat bike is not the same experience as riding a road bike. So it's going to feel kind of wholly different. So, you know, I would say number one is just try to do different things. And that also like will make you better balanced physically. If you Nordic ski, you have to use your arms more, or you're using your core more, or whatever it is. It's a different kind of activity than being on a bike. For weight training, my number one thing, I would just say this, is focus on proper form. If you're going to go into a gym, don't go grab the heaviest weight you can find and just, you know, start muscling it. It's really about, you know, sort of quality versus quantity or mass. It's just really, you know, start light, start easy. Most of us probably don't lift weights all year. And so if you try to start lifting weights, you know, sort of right off the cap and you are too aggressive about it, you're probably going to hurt yourself. I think it's also just a good idea. I mean, it might be a good time to, you know, have a session with a personal trainer or something like that and just get an idea of some exercises you could focus on, you know, but it would be the things, you know, focus on core and back and, you know, the big muscles in your legs, just sort of making you a more well-balanced physical person. And then for riding indoors, I think it's important, if possible, and I know this is a big if because I have the space, but if you have possible to have a dedicated setup, it'll allow you two things. It'll allow you to sort of tailor that to your needs so that you can have a fan and maybe you have a TV or some sort of platform to hold a tablet, something that you can sort of watch while you're doing the trainer. And then also, if the setup is always there, it's a lot easier to do it. If the act of riding your bike indoors is always preceded by a half hour of setup, you might be less likely to do it. So if you can sort of create a nice, comfortable space and the bike is there and it's waiting for you, you'll be more apt to use it. And then there's a lot of neat, when I do ride indoors, there's a Zwift is a sort of semi-new phenomenon out there. And it's basically like an online training platform, but it almost feels like a video game. And for me, my biggest struggle with riding indoors is just sort of staying engaged and not getting bored. And so something like Zwift, where you're sort of virtually racing or at least riding with other people, helps occupy the brain and pass the time quicker. Because you know, I don't, people joke that an hour on the trainer feels like 2 hours outside, and I don't know if that's necessarily correct. But anything you can do to help pass the time will make riding indoors a little easier. Yeah, that's kind of the winner in a nutshell, I guess.
Yeah, or go, as you said at the beginning, go outside. You know, it's not like you can't unless it's a blizzard. The two other topics I want to discuss before I let you go. One is rest. And those of us who believe that not riding must mean we're resting, that's not altogether true. There is something about rest that is really, really important to overtraining and recovery and all the things that have to combine to make you a better cyclist and to be able to keep getting out there.
Well, I, you know, to sort of reiterate your point, rest is huge. You know, the first cycling coach I ever had was a gentleman named Neil Henderson. He's based out of Boulder, Colorado, and has worked with lots of Olympic athletes and is really well known sort of in the cycling world. He said to me that training is not what makes you stronger. It's rest that makes you stronger. It allows for that adaptation. So I think the number one thing, cyclists can be a little bit compulsive, maybe is the word I'm looking for. They just feel like if they're not riding their bike, they're going backwards. And that just couldn't be further from the truth. It's really important to get rest and to really just listen to your body. And so if you're feeling really tired, that's not the time to go out and do more work. That's the time to back off. And I think the other important point for me to make about rest is that rest isn't mowing your lawn. Rest isn't running every errand that's on your to-do list. Rest isn't spending the entire day on an airplane. Rest isn't, you know, driving across country or whatever. Rest is really actually getting some quality downtime for both your body and your brain. So if your rest day is the most stressful day at work, that's probably not the most ideal situation. So if possible, if you can really have a truly restful day, that's really important. On the flip side, there's also something people talk about, what's called active recovery. And this is the idea that if you really want to ride your bike, it's maybe not the end of the world. It's not going to, you know, set you backwards, but go out and do a recovery ride. And that simply means just spinning very, very easily and relaxing and taking time to look around or having conversations with your friends. And, you know, it gets a little bit of blood flowing, keeps the muscle memory there, but doesn't sort of tax the system like a real training ride would. So, you know, a lot of it's just listening to your body and figuring out what works for you. And there's not one right answer. But just knowing that rest is perhaps one of, if not the most important equations to a more holistic approach to getting faster, stronger on your bike.
Well, we need to wrap this up, and I really appreciate that all of this information is in your book. There's a lot more. There's information about heart rate and training and getting proper bike fit, all of the things that are important to make you a more skillful and better cyclist. Jason Sumner, the book is The Complete Book of Road Cycling Skills. It's the second edition. It's out by Rodale Press. You can probably get it on, what, Amazon? On probably anywhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon's always the default, and it's definitely there. make sure you get the new version. This is the second edition. There is also a first edition, which is out there. And much of the information that was in that first edition was adapted for the second edition. But there's been some good revisions and some new pictures and things like that. So make sure you get the second edition. And
it was published in August. So you can find out if you've got the right edition by looking. It was August 2016 is when this book was published.
That is a great point.
Jason, thank you so much for joining me today on the show, and good luck. I hope you've got some nice new projects coming up for you. We'll be watching.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All righty. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Jason Sumner, author of Bicycling, Complete Book of Road Cycling Skills. Remember, it's the second edition. It has lots of good information. His writing is really humorous and fun to read. That is our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed our guests. Patrick Brady from Red Kite Prayer, Stephen Belinke from the Philly Bike Expo, and of course, one of the premier frame builders in the country, and Jason Sumner, author and cyclist. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you'll be back next week when we'll have a brand new show. As always, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.